You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
In the criminal justice system, people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups. The police, who investigate the crime. The district attorneys, who prosecute the offenders. And the sexy judges who make all the decisions. These are not their stories, because this is Eat, 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 and Run. We got to eat, 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 and run. Eat, 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 and run. Music!
Thou art to be hanged and then burnt over a basket of living cats.
Podcast where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
He said, introducing his guest to the podcast.
And Erica.
America, I'm in the sausage business. Real Italian sausage.
Oh, and welcome to
November.
No. November.
That's right. No! November. This is a month where we're talking about all the movies that previously we said, no, not this one. But now we're going to catch up. This is our year-end catch-up with some of those movies that we said, I don't know. And that just fits perfectly for this particular movie, which, depending on what cover you're looking at, you just sometimes with New World, you're like, no, I know we'll get there, but yeah. I just need, yeah. And we're talking about 1986. We're talking
ooh.
About.
Ooh, wait, hold on.
Wrong month. No. Wrong month. Sorry. This is not September. 1986's Eat and Run.
New York, the city that's seen it all. Now, as a visitor, like no one it's ever seen. Eat and Run. He's a space alien on vacation. 10,000 light years from home.
35 people have been reported missing in this city since yesterday. I want you to come up with some answers.
His name is Murray. He's here. And he's hungry.
Capetti, that's not food, that's me.
Trying to tell me some creature from outer space is going around eating Italians?
A spear carrier is coming from the wings. Oh, my lord. Is eating.
That's not in the movie. That's not in the
He's
movie.
Entered a weird world.
Was it for you?
Where relationships are intense.
That was what for me?
Where languages are intriguing.
The Prussian, Persian, Pasha, and this blush of Portia puts pressure on the pusher who passes to a fisher.
Go on!
And where passions can be intergalactic.
I'm a Gemini. Ooh. I've had some time to think.
When?
When we were having sex.
Can Murray adjust to a new way of living? Can the Big Apple adjust to a new way of dining?
I think he wants to be alone with me.
Only love can break the heart. But only Murray would eat it.
Freeze! Bang, bang!
9-11 emergency.
There's a killer after me.
Please hold.
Eat and Run. A comedy you can sink your teeth into.
That's right. A trailer cut by our previous guest, Kevin Sewelson. He cut that trailer for 1986's Eat and Run, brought to you by Cheryl Cohen's grandmother's Zeppelin stand. The best place for Zeppelin's in Little Italy. Come for the Zeppelin's, but stay to observe your wristwatch as it gets deep fried. And don't forget to leave Cheryl's grandma's a note in a briefcase. Make sure the case is exactly like the other one we always keep behind the counter. At Cheryl Cohen's grandmother's Zeppeli stand, your family, as long as you buy a drink.
And Zeppeli's, actually. You have to buy both.
he only bought a soda in a brown bag.
No, he got Zeppeli's also.
No, he didn't want one. And then he said, you don't want a drink? So he just gets a drink. He just gets
But before that, he says, do you want a Zeppeli? He said, no. He said, then get out of here. So he bought the Zeppeli's. Oh, and he said, do you want a drink? He's like, no. He's like, then get out of here. He's like, okay, I'll take a Diet Pepsi,
okay,
which I can't blame him for. That is delicious with the Zeppeli. I mean,
gross.
Little pastries with that little cream in there, and then you get the Diet Pepsi in your mouth. You just take one little bite of the Zeppeli, and then you take a little sip of that Diet Pepsi in there, give it a little swish around in your mouth. Oh, it's delicious.
You're making this delight. Film sound gross.
Yeah.
It is gross, Ryan. It is.
Opposite of ASMR. Wait, that's your next podcast, ASMARK. Or no,
I changed my I changed the spelling of my name.
That's right.
Wow. That's right. Wow. Okay. That way people don't know it's me.
Yeah.
If you have a podcast called ASM Mark, no one's going to look it up by the sea. You just might as well just give in.
It's true.
You're just going to give in to the kid.
You got to have a stage name anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's right. My name's Mark, but I like to go by Mark, if you don't mind.
Spelled differently.
Yeah.
Said exactly the same.
Yeah.
No one knows it's me.
Yeah. Oh, Mark. No. Mark. Thank you.
Oh, Mark. Oh. Got it. Oh, great stage name.
This could have been a scene in Eat and Run. Am I right? This hilarious banter.
This could have been.
A name spelling?
I think this was in Eat and Run, actually.
They had this fun wordplay. Definitely they had a lot of fun wordplay.
So much wordplay.
This movie is directed by Christopher Hart. In his debut, the then 28-year-old Hart actually was an artist. He'd studied at CalArts and NYU and worked on the comic strip Blondie as well as Mad Magazine. And he had written already several how-to books about drawing. He directed this in an episode of Tales from the Crypt in the 90s. And that is about it for him as a director. So what he's done instead is he's written tons of books about drawing and had a life as an artist. And that's been his career ongoing. Still putting out books. And he wrote this script with his father, Stan Hart, who at one point in time was the head writer of the Carol Burnett Show in the 1970s.
Aww.
So this was a father and son team. How they got this film made and got to, I don't know. That will remain a mystery, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars somehow also inexplicably Ron Silver, who at this point still had a career. He'd been in movies like Semi-Tough. He'd been in a bunch of TV shows and movies. He had a recurring role in Rhoda. And he had just been in the 1984 films Garbo Talks with Anne Bancroft and Oh God, You Devil, the third part.
Everyone's favorite and of most the Oh God series.
Of the Oh God films.
A movie that we saw in the theaters.
Yes, we did. We saw a lot of the third ones, having seen the other ones. And we went in going, yeah, like Smokey and the Bandit 3. We're like, heck yeah, we're going to see it in the movie theater. Oh. Oh.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh. Well, Superman 3.
Yep. We're like, yes, Superman. And Richard Pryor.
It's got Richard Pryor. How could this go wrong?
Can't go wrong. Well, it went wrong, as it turns out. Superman fought a computer.
Oh,
it's still a joy to watch now, but at the time, as a little kid, it was quite disappointing. But anyway, so Ron Silver, his career would take off after this, but not because of this, I don't think.
I think it is. I think you're wrong.
This is what put him on the map.
Mm-hmm.
He actually, shortly after this, he wins a Tony Award in 1988 for Speed the Plow, David Mamet play. And then he begins a run of playing villains in the 1990s, which is almost unmatched, starting with Catherine Bigelow's Blue Steel, starring Jamie Lee Curtis in 1990. and Time Cop and a bunch of other movies where he plays the bad guy. And he's always terrific in that. But he's the hero in this, and he's great. Very funny. And here's where you can watch Eat and Run. Just hold that thought. You can watch Eat and Run basically on our YouTube page for as long as it will remain there. That's where you can. It's almost nowhere to be found. It's kind of a forgotten, lost film, but you can find it. I'm talking about the listeners, Mark. We know you have seen it.
Oh, I was like, are you telling me? Because I don't need to go to our YouTube page. I've seen this.
Mark has seen this. Also, Mark has seen this.
What you meant is Mark has seen this.
Oh, okay? I'm so sorry. I didn't get that right. But that's where you can see it. But let's tell you what this movie is about. Let's go around. And Mark, let's start with you. What is Eat and Run about?
A police investigator and a prosecutor team up to solve the murder of a popular New Orleans talk show host. Wait, no. Sorry, that's False Witness, starring Felicia Rashad and Miami Vice's Philip Michael Thomas. Okay. This one is a police investigator and a now judge, soon to be prosecutor, team up to stop the murder of a shaved ice cart host.
Was it shaved ice though?
Yeah, shave ice. That's what he had.
Oh, all right. Well, then, yeah. Okay, I'm convinced. Okay. Well, this is a convince me, right?
Yeah.
This is a convince me, right?
Episode.
This is a convince me episode. Did I convince you? You convince me. That's the plot.
When you bring up False Witness, it made me just think of Erica Song. First song for False Witness. That's all I can think of when I think of that movie now.
Well, when I think of False Witness, I think how you couldn't say Felicia. It kept saying Felicia.
Yeah. It was like I said Mark instead of Mark.
Yeah, that was so dumb. What?
I can't remember my song from False Witness. I remember the shoulder kiss.
Oh, the shoulder kiss.
The shoulder kisses. Oh my God.
Can you hear it?
Barely.
It doesn't work well on the podcast. You can't hear it quite as good.
The shoulder kisses are just legendary. But Erica, what is Eat and Run about?
Oh yeah, Eat and Run. Yeah, I think it's just about how, look, we all think that Italians look hot, but did you also know that they're delicious tasting? This movie proves that if you were suddenly a cannibal, or if you were, needed to, I don't know, consume people for some reason to have sustenance, that Italians would be the best and tastiest choice.
That is sure. That is 100% true.
Well, for me, this movie is about when an outbreak of mysterious deaths occurs in New York City, how a police chief turns to food to handle the stress.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, that's really good.
He really eats his feelings.
It's interesting that you bring that up, to say the least. It's a good point, and it brings up something I wanted to mention. This movie's called Eat and Run. Can you guess how many scenes of this movie are of people eating?
Oh,
did you crunch the numbers on people eating and Eat and Run?
I may have.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
Ooh, it's gotta be high because people are eating always. Not just the chief, mm-hmm. every scene with the chief, mm-hmm. but also the alien. And so I'm gonna say 30.
No, guess again.
Oh, I was gonna say 5.
Guess again.
You're going, this is like Price is Right rules.
$1. No.
Keep guessing.
40?
Guess again.
45.
Is he like hot or cold? What's the...
I don't know.
Just keep guessing. Come on.
600.
And listeners, if you like this little bit we're doing right now, this happens in Eat and Run a few different times, this guess again bit.
That's right. So, that's right.
Oh, God, you got us.
You got us. We didn't even see it coming.
Nope. Walked right into it.
But in all seriousness, 14 times.
Oh,
there are
scenes
of people eating. Now, how many times do you think there are scenes of people running?
Oh, geez.
Zero times. No, there is one scene where you run.
Maybe twice. I think twice.
Guess again.
Oh, man, he guessed again.
How many guesses do we get? How many guesses do we get?
Guess.
Four? I'm going to say we have four guesses.
Nope. Guess again.
We're definitely going
after this. Triple guess again.
There are five. It's when McSorley runs after Pat eats the pizza. After Pat eats the pizza restaurant owner.
Okay.
Then McSorley runs back from the sandwich shop. Then McSorley runs to the Zeppeli stand. Then there is when the mime fake runs, which I counted as still a run.
Yeah, still a run.
Then when McSorley runs back to Cheryl's apartment after he was sent out to get batteries.
Oh.
Got it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then doesn't get them.
You're really paying attention to this.
Yeah. I had time on my hands.
Yeah, not to spoil anything, but he does not get those batteries, so sorry to spoil the movie. But speaking of, let's get into the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you want. Also, just while we're here talking about us and what we do as a podcast, just so you know, we have a website, newworldpicturespodcast.com, and you can go there and you can get all of our episodes, previous episodes, bonus episodes, regular episodes, our merch, our socials. There's even a few articles on there you can check out. So it's all there at our website. Also, you can go follow us on Letterboxd. And here's the synopsis for Eat and Run. A humanoid alien lands on Earth and soon discovers he likes to eat Italian. Italian people, that is.
Letterboxd.
You little lark.
You're just getting funny. You're just funny, Letterboxd.
So funny.
Someone typed that and did a total like shoulders up.
I'm clever.
Oh, that was funny.
I should be a joke writer and not a synopsis writer.
Had a little reward cookie.
I deserve it. I wrote a funny joke. Incompetent Detective McSorley is the only one with a clue about what's going on, and even his grasp of the situation isn't too firm. The rest of the police force thinks he's crazy, while the alien continues sampling the Italian cuisine of New York City. And so only us and 305 other people have read that, because there's only 305 people that have logged this movie on Letterboxd. So
wow. Is
which,
that the
to be
lowest
honest, was more,
that
more
we've
than
had?
I
mean, that's more than Party Incorporated, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think Party Incorporated is one of the lowest. It was lower than the Cremators.
I think Party Incorporated was like 50 something, like 57.
It was very low. It was very
low.
That
makes me sad. Poor Party Incorporated. They deserve better than that. We should throw a party to cheer them up.
If only we knew somebody who could plan it.
I get a cookie.
That's another one for me.
Party Incorporated has been viewed, however, 189 times. On our YouTube page. So so more people are watching it on our YouTube page than have logged it on Letterboxd. So I don't know.
Well, but won't those kind of go hand in hand? Like, the more people watch it on our YouTube page, the more
hopefully
that
they're now logging in on Letterboxd. Yeah,
it on
we'll
Letterboxd.
See it. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So because this is not a movie that a lot of people have seen, let's talk quickly about this movie and what it's about. It's a comedy. And it starts with the scene where the alien Murray arrives on Earth and he eats his first victim, who's a farmer.
Hey, don't tell me you never had Italian food. You don't know what you're missing. There's no words to describe it. Italian food is so delicious, so heavenly. Makes your tongue want to say, hey, it's nice in here. Yeah, once you take a bite of Italian food, never ever want nothing else.
Young people like you nowadays talk about health foods, being vegetarians, silly stuff like that.
So, this is how he gets his inspiration. Of course, our alien Murray does not speak any, he doesn't speak at all throughout the whole thing. He just grunts to the movie. And it made me kind of think, though, was like, was Italian food suddenly like brand new thing in the 80s? Was that like all of a sudden it was really in vogue to, for Italian restaurants? And that's what maybe inspired the movie?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to Old Spaghetti Factory quite a bit back then. It seemed like a pretty cool place to be.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, yeah, I mean, for the most, you know, traditional, like, Italian food, like purely Italian, you know, like
I think,
you know.
I think that's also when like Olive Garden really hit its stride. Yeah, it was in the 80s. So I feel like we're in the authentic midst of a real, well, I'm only bringing up the authentic stuff, but I mean, I'm not going to,
give some people like, some big chains that they could get into and maybe have it in their own neighborhoods.
Oh, I think Buca di Beppo started right about then.
Yeah, it just seems like all of a sudden I was like, is there like, was this just a thing? Because it seems like so ordinary for Italian food, but I was like, oh, what if at the time it was kind of all of a sudden like.
It was having a renaissance.
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe it did. I don't know. I was too young to know. I was too, too little. What did I know?
Oh, you get a cookie.
Aww. Hello, cookie. Aww,
I get a cookie. Little joke for being cookie. Young and fun. by the way, the alien is played by R.L. Ryan, who would be familiar to fans of trauma movies because he had appearances in Toxic Avenger and Class of Nukem High. He was also in Street Trash, but this is his biggest role that he ever had. And unfortunately, then he passes away in the 1990s. So, but we are then introduced to our hero, Detective McSorley, who's played by Ron Silver, who is in charge of this case of finding all these missing Italians in New York City. And one of the biggest jokes of the movie is that he talks, there's this voiceover, like he's in a noir film, and it turns out that he's talking to himself. It is a great joke, but it is used often. It is used a lot, and it is their strongest joke. So I get it, but it's used a lot. But here's a great version of it, at least, where he's talking to himself.
I was thinking about all the names of the victims, all those Italian names. And where they were killed, Little Italy. And it dawned on me, some maniac was killing Italians in Little Italy. So I went right to the heart of the problem. Maybe, just maybe, there was somebody who could tell me something, anything. I needed a lead and I...
Hey, hold it. Hey, just shut up a minute. What are you, fucking nuts?
Being quiet.
This fucking guy don't stop talking to himself. Look, you interrupt the fucking game. And you fucking stand here talking to your fucking self. Take a fucking walk.
I was getting nowhere fast, but I was convinced that somewhere in this neighborhood was the answer. That if I...
Oh, that's him, like, interrupting a basketball game with his voiceovering. I don't know. It's a very strong bit. I will admit. It's a very funny bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, to your point, it's they go back to that well too many times. It actually makes up a significant part of the movie.
Yeah.
Also, the first Olive Garden opened December 13th, 1982 in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, so, 1982.
I think.
Oh.
I think.
Wow.
I mean, that was the first one. It so was. We were seeing the hockey stick of authentic Italian food hitting popular culture.
Classic, excellent food. Yeah. I remember going there once and somebody I was with had to have they had to send back their food because the chicken that they had ordered was still in the plastic wrap. They had heated it up, but they didn't pull it out of the plastic after they had pulled it out of the microwave and put it on the plate. And they were like, oh, but let me get you another one.
Italian plastic.
It's authentic. Yeah. Authentic. Straight.
Yeah.
From Sicily.
I think you're confusing it with a Cisco truck, but I think that's the same thing.
Right. Cisco is from Sicily.
You didn't know that?
That's the next that's thing, babe.
That's Sicily's stage name. It's Cisco.
That's the next thing they exported. Their food, and then...
if Sicily had an ASMR channel, it'd be a Cisco MR podcast.
Oh, man.
All right.
Okay. All right, so then we meet Judge Cheryl Cohen, and he then quickly hooks up with her in another moment that...
Let her just walk out of my life like that. I had to do something, and I had to do something fast, but what? How could I tell her in a word or a gesture that she was the most elegant, the most desirable woman I had ever seen in my life? There was only one way. The universal language of love. I had to give it a try. Your Honor?
Yes.
And sort of puts his tongue out to her and just...
I thought about that, and it's very uncomfortable, and at the same time, I guess maybe guys overthink pickup lines. You can just... Maybe that's all you got to do.
Yeah.
I love the scene where... So he very quickly hooks up, and there's a... They're in bed. It's a lovemaking scene. It's, you know, it's nothing explicit, but they go out of their way to hide how hairy Ron Silver's back is.
Yeah. Like,
they are maneuvering the sheets in very unusual patterns just to try to hide that from the camera.
And failing because it's impossible. Yeah, because it's, I mean, impossible. No offense, but like, yeah, it's pretty intense back there. Yeah. But they do have a very, very funny exchange.
How was it for you?
How was what for me?
Forget it.
What's the matter?
I promised I wouldn't let myself fall in love again.
Isn't that interesting? I did too.
Well, I guess I broke my promise.
I didn't.
I love
the
that.
Pause there where he just kind of like hangs in that. It's
yeah.
Great. Uh-huh. It's great. There's some very funny exchanges with the two of them. The judge, by the way, is played by Sharon Scharth, who is credited here as Sharon Schlarth. So we want to talk about Mark versus Mark.
What? Oh, wow.
She now goes by Scharth, but she was Schlarth. Schlarth. She was Schlarth.
For a time, he did consider being called Mlark.
It was a short time that I talked about it.
Very short time.
It sounds natural.
Mlark.
Right. I brought Mark or Mlark down to a high school in Venice and asked the kids which they preferred. And they chose Mark. So yeah,
that's the New I'm World stuck way. With it now. That's how New World does it. Schlarth was a stage actress, and she'd appeared in a few TV shows as well as a 1985 horror film called The Doorman, which is one of Bradley Whitford's earliest roles, and we mentioned it in our Adventures in Babysitting commentary, because he did that right before Adventures in Babysitting, and she did that right before this. But McSorley, he does finally catch the alien. He finds the alien in the act, but... not actually in the act, because we don't see it. We see his horrified face. We don't actually see it because we never see the alien Murray actually eat anybody. Right. We don't see anything really too crazy, which made me think, like, what is the rating? Do you know what the rating is for this?
No.
There are a couple F-bombs, so I'm going to assume it's an R.
Yeah, it's an R. It's an R-rated film.
And it's a light R.
Purely because of, as we played in the earlier clip, lots of F-bombs. But that is the only reason why it would be, it is pretty tame mm-hmm. In all other aspects. He does get Judge Cheryl to stop a drug dealer from being jailed so he can use him for bait. He tapes him up with drugs so it will slow the creature down, which does work, but not before first the guy gets in an epic sandwich order.
A little sandwich shop about two blocks down.
Two blocks is too far. I cannot be gone that long.
You want to save time? You run there and you run back.
Good running.
You get me a breast of turkey with Dijon mustard on a warm croissant.
Okay.
I don't want any of this pressed turkey roll shit. You stand there and you watch him carve it off the bird.
Anything to drink?
Yeah. Give me a diet soda.
Decaffeinated?
Surprise me.
Watch him carve it off the bird. It's a good sandwich. It sounds like a good sandwich, to be honest.
Sounds delicious.
Then we enter into some legal satire because we actually Murray, because he's been captured, has a hearing before the judge, and it's found that Murray is a juvenile. So, and that ultimately he was not read his rights in his native language. So he is released on bail.
I don't think that's how it works, though. I don't think because you're not read your Miranda rights in your native language that you just get to walk. I tried to crunch the numbers on that one and ran out of time, but I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not how it works. But
It would, you know, if there was such a case that had ever been happened, that had ever happened, that you would use case law to try to see what you could do to amp that up. But yes, it's far-fetched because this is a crazy movie about an alien that comes down to Earth and eats Italian people. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think
But before we get back to the silliness of this movie, Ryan, let's talk about this. If he was read his Miranda rights and he was really brought in, you would really go, this person doesn't speak English. So they would bring in other people to read the Miranda rights and what they would attempt to be in whatever that person's language is.
Yeah, sure. Which they couldn't because it's an alien, so...
No, they could have. They'd just be like,
Yeah, right. He is released on bail and then immediately starts dating the judge, and which Erica did not like.
I did not like that.
And she is into him.
Uh-huh.
Really.
But why did you like it, Erica? Come on.
I did not like it. I don't like that. That was a no member for me. Because they say that he has the mental capacity of a 12-year-old. So even if he's grown up, he's identified as 12. That's yucky. That's yucky.
So this is like the dilemma that happens at the end of Big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, good point.
Yeah. So, she is into him. And that sends McSorley on a depression. So he goes around drinking fancy cocktails at various bars. He does discover the judge is Italian. And then
sadness. There's no sadness that can't be shoved way, way down into the bottom of your belly there's no sadness that can overcome fancy cocktails served in pineapples, coconuts, and plastic jack-o'-lanterns or pumpkins.
What's the one served in a tiny jack-o'-lantern? Where does that one?
That's the second round. There are drinks that are in like a plastic jack-o'-lantern. And he says, this time, don't let the candle go out. Because there's a candle in it.
Oh, shoot, I missed that.
But what drink is that? I would totally love to know what that is. I'm sure they're just making it up.
I have no clue.
But I love it.
I'm sure it's made up.
Come on. But somebody has to do something with that. He finds out that the judge is Italian. He tries to save her. And he does. He completely outsmarts Murray. And that's how he saves her from being eaten. In a scene we don't see. Because the judge wakes up and then he lets her know how he outsmarted him and talks to him. Mm-hmm. And then we do a big bit about names and the mime. And yep. and they do this all through dialogue instead of showing us in a movie what happened. But okay, that's fine.
It feels like that was either they were pressed for time or something got screwed up in whatever they were shooting. And they were like, we got to cut all this out.
Or they couldn't afford to shoot the scene, or I don't know. But, you know, so it just felt like something's up and they just tried to make it funny and did some goofy stuff to try to like cover over the fact that we were not seeing it. But it felt like it would have been something we could have seen and it would have lasted about 3 seconds.
For sure. And then it's the hero moment of the movie and you don't see it.
And you don't see it. Mm-hmm. It's not there. But anyway.
Wild.
So McSorley leaves the judge to get supplies together for his final plan, and the judge showers and in comes Murray ready to eat her until McSorley comes back with his plan, and it's revealed to be a real Friday the 13th Part 4 kind of plan where he has a little doll made up to look like Murray, the alien.
Yep.
And he's like, look at your little baby. Much like Corey Feldman dressed up like little Jason to confuse him.
I was wondering where you're going with this. Yeah. I'm like, okay, wait. There's the twins in the house. There's the guy that wants to watch the porno movies on the loop. Too early. You got Crispin Glover.
You're running through the whole film. You're running through the film in your mind. What I like that you don't skip to the end. You go, wait, okay, hold on. Let me start at the beginning. There's a family. They happen to live nearby.
Yeah.
Corey Lots of people own got, homes on Crystal Lake now. Yeah, so this is a thing. Yeah, okay, this is different than where we left off in 3. Okay, fine.
They're all riding in the car and they're talking about how Crispin Glover is like can't have sex and or he's a dead fuck. That's what they say. He's a dead fuck.
Yeah, you've got to go through all the steps, Mark, and then you'll get there.
I'm getting there right. Hold on, guys. Give me about 20 minutes and I'll understand where you're going with this.
Just process this for a good 20 minutes. Every audience, hang on. Let Mark work this out.
No, let Mark work this out. Oh,
I'm so sorry. I keep getting that wrong. It's a real Felicia thing for me. So he has a little baby that looks just like him, and that he gets all excited and he takes the baby and then of course flips the tag around and says made in Italy. So he eats the head off the baby doll which turns out to be poison. And he poisons him, and then in another moment of law that Mark is probably going to love, that turns out the police are going to charge McSorley in the end with manslaughter because they said he didn't technically do anything wrong on bail. And then his girlfriend comes in, freshly a prosecuting attorney, and says she's actually going to go for murder one, a bigger charge than manslaughter.
And she starts to verbalize her own inner monologue, just like him, as though now she's become him. And when I looked on IMDb about this movie, people were saying this is like an Airplane ripoff.
Yeah.
And that's what I read before I started this movie. And I was really looking forward to it being an Airplane ripoff.
It certainly is not. You don't make this movie unless Airplane has a giant success. They're not gonna. This isn't something you want to go shoot unless, because it does have a lot of the silliness of it. I wouldn't say it throws a lot of gags at the wall, but I wouldn't say it's wall to wall gags. Oh, I get a cookie for that one.
Get a little cookie. Ooh,
little chip
that's
cookie.
Clever. That's clever. Yummy.
Oh. I'm taking the rest of the day off, Letterboxd.
You deserve it.
You owe me for that one.
At least it ends in an unexpected way, and I will give it that.
For sure.
But anyway, it's time. It's that time, Erica.
It's that time for things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and things we hated about Eat and Run. Mark, what's something you loved?
I love that McSorley's dad, Sorley McSorley, is one part accomplished pianist, but also can't hit any of the notes. I mean, mm-hmm. his music has been published and plays in elevators. And it's the technical structure of the song is really hard to play. It's just all the notes are wrong. And mm-hmm. I know that's the joke.
Sure.
But I was like, that joke worked for me. I thought that was hilarious. So
that's a good one.
Because he's got to play the piano just to think through his problems. That's a good joke.
Yeah,
it is. You don't see that kind of piano joke play often.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then when it's playing in the elevator, when he's trying to come up and save Cheryl, I was like, that's a good joke too.
He takes a minute and he's just like bopping along
All
right.
All right. Cool. Dead song.
Erica, so what did you love?
We already kind of touched on it a little bit, the constant narration of his life and what he's observing by McSorley. I thought that was very funny. And then same scene when you see his father, and his father does it as well. He's doing the commentary. Loved that. Mm-hmm. I also really loved the fry cook at the end. Who kept frying he fries his ring, and then he fries his watch, and then he fries his crucifix.
Yeah.
Tries to blow it off. He's like, oh, I burned my lips. That just, I know we're not in final questions yet, but that whole scene was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
So,
it was good.
Wow.
That was a good one.
My question is, do we understand what final questions is? Doesn't seem like we did.
We've lost
what the final questions are. But anyway, what I loved is Ron Silver is very good in this, but I have to say, I really have to hand it to the judge, Sharon mm-hmm. Schleth. I thought she was very good in this. And she's just very funny. So I have just a brief little clip about, again, another scene where they're in bed together. I just thought she was very funny. She always made me laugh in this.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask if you had herpes.
No, God, no. It's one thing I don't have.
It's not so bad. It stings from time to time, but doesn't interfere with my social life.
Her just sort of her laissez-faire attitude about everything is just so great. It's so I mean, and it's a very, very dumb joke, but it's just I think she delivers it really, really well, and her timing is really, really good. And you need that, especially when you are always doing scenes where you're just doing it in one take. So which they do a lot. But let's not get ahead of myself in terms of things we hated, but it is time for things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I really don't like Ron Silver's voice. It creeps me out.
Wow.
Because he's a villain. He's a villain in almost everything.
It's too soft. It's too... It's too even keeled. It's always this sort of like... I'm sort of whispering and I'm sort of talking and it's always the same. And it just creeps me out. What also creeped me out is the eating sounds from when the captain's eating in the police station. And between Ron Silver's voice and the sound of the captain eating, it was the opposite of ASMR. I was getting annoyed mm-hmm. and freaked out by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's just... It's an audio cacophony for me that I just could not handle.
I'm just think it's because he's played so many villains, it's hard to accept him in the sort of goofy hero role. Because you just heard him play so many villains. It's very hard. He has a natural villain's voice. I get it. Erica, what is something you hated?
The pace was what I hated. The pace of the scenes. Especially the scenes that do have that really funny writing and that funny banter, and some of the clips that you shared have it, but it would go on. It should have been cut. Yes. It should have been edited. It should go on to the next scene. And for whatever reason, they're just a little too long, and then in some cases much too long. And I think it really, it for me, it was really distracting and really took me out of it. I think if that would be clipped a bit and a little cleaned up, like maybe this would have had a little more of a cult following later down the line or some more followership or just been like this. Have you seen this crazy thing? Like, it's crazy. And it would, and I think it would have even been closer to like an Airplane-esque knockoff, or, you know, Airplane-esque
style movie. You know,
style. Yeah. Had it had that, because Airplane is just that. It's just gag, 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 gag. It's just constant. And I don't know if that the pacing was them trying to keep it that sort of noir. Oh, it's the detective, but it didn't have enough of that. It didn't have enough of the detective pace to make it seem like a detective comedy. And it didn't have, it wasn't fast enough to just be a comedy, like a silly,
comedy. So I felt the same way. The pacing to me was really tough, because there is some funny moments in this. So I felt Roger Corman over my shoulder, just begging them to trim 3 frames off the beginning and end of each scene. Yeah. And there's just way too many scenes, as I was just saying, covered in a single take. And there's very few close-ups. And I don't know if it's due to budget constraints. They didn't like cover themselves. I don't know if they just decided stylistically not to worry about too much coverage and try to do things in singles. I also, you know, when we talked to Kevin Sewelson and Dave Parker, they talked a lot about how they would recut movies. And I don't know if this is a movie that New World financed or not, but because they didn't finance tons of them. They were, but they were still making them in 1986, but they were still picking up a lot of movies. I feel like this is probably a pickup, but I could be wrong. And they might have taken it and cut it up, because there is a bit that's in the trailer about him going and eating an opera singer that's not in the movie. So clearly there's extra footage. Mm-hmm. And this movie's 86 minutes, you know? And yet I feel like you could have trimmed the movie down and made it a little faster and quicker, and maybe it would have been 75 minutes.
For sure.
But better pace.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
It's when McSorley goes to get the morphine from the evidence department.
Heck yeah, absolutely.
He's also being convinced if he buys the morphine, he'll also get a 6-piece cutlery set.
This exclusive offer is for you.
Right.
What would you pay for a heavy dose of morphine?
You just tell
me. Don't answer. Because along with your heavy dose of morphine, you'll also receive this. A handsome 6-piece cutlery set. Now, what would you pay for a heavy dose of morphine plus the 6-piece cutlery set?
Whatever.
Don't answer. Because along with your heavy dose of morphine, your 6-piece cutlery set, you'll also receive this fabulous Gizu carving knife. Comes with a 50-year money-back guarantee. Mm. Now, what would you pay?
Don't answer. Okay.
Because along with your heavy dose of morphine, your 6-piece cutlery set, your fabulous Gizu carving knife, you will also receive a complete set of designer patio furniture. Now, what would you pay?
The guy who's playing the evidence locker cop plays it perfectly. His timing's perfect.
He does.
And that's a scene, actually, the pacing's good. They keep it going just long enough, and then they cut it and be like, move on. So,
yes. Yeah. Yep.
Erica, your favorite scene?
I have 2 scenes that are kind of tied for my favorite. One was from, you played the clip earlier, Mark, the love scene.
Mark.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. A lot of people get it wrong.
with McSorley and the judge, where they're going back and forth, and she has that great, he's like, I promised myself I wouldn't fall in love again. I guess I broke my promise. I didn't. That just made me laugh out loud. Thought that was hilarious. And the second is, again, I've already kind of mentioned it, but towards the end, the scene with the grandmother, and she's in the porta potty and there's no toilet paper.
Yeah.
So she's just coming back and like wiping her hands on her apron. And then you have the fry cook. He's like, oh, I fried my ring again. And then he fries his watch. And he comes back later in the hallucination. He's like, I fried my watch. I could not get enough of that guy frying things.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Yep. Those are my two favorites.
And bringing it back like that, especially when she's like passed out and she's hearing all these different things, and then she hears that, which is not something she would have heard because she wasn't there for it. But it's just
she wasn't even there.
So random and silly that they throw that in there. That really worked there. I had the same scene as Mark. So let's go to some final questions. Only a couple questions here, but what is it about buttons that Murray can't digest?
Great question.
He doesn't seem to have a problem with shoes.
Yeah, right. Or clothes, or jewelry.
Belt buckles. Or anything. But
yeah. I wasn't sure about the buttons either, but then when he eats the undercover guy who has the monkey, like that toy monkey that's doing the symbols, and he spits out the symbols. I was like, is it just metal? So maybe it's like metal buttons and he can't eat the metal because he spits out the symbols.
It's a good point, because he also spits out the change in the beginning.
Yeah, but then he doesn't spit out belt buckles, so it has a little
inconsistent
there. I don't know.
Of all the desserts the captain eats, which one is your favorite?
Probably the Debbie cake at the end. The cake that's made out to Debbie.
That's made out to Debbie?
Yeah. It's like, who's Debbie? How the hell should I know? Just eating it.
I liked when he's just eating a giant bowl of whipped cream with a whisk.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. You know, I like I like when he's, on the dessert delivery guy for not getting him a proper 7-layer cake, like,
yeah,
he asked for 7 layers.
Yeah. Let's count those layers.
Now, one thing we learn about aliens in this movie is that they can eat people. As we said, they eat the entire person, just not the buttons, but bones, I guess, and everything else. But also, aliens get STDs?
I guess so.
Only STDs were buttons.
Yeah.
Just spit them right out.
I don't know how that works. I don't know. Anyway, well, there won't be much research here, but here we go. This movie was released in theaters October 17th, 1986, in Chicago and other parts in the Midwest. I'm not sure how much it made in the box office or how much it was made for, so I don't know. But I have to think it had some kind of budget, at least $2 or $3 million, because it's shot in New York, but I don't know. I did find, though, that New World had a movie that was near the top of the box office for the entire year, released around the same time. Can you guys guess what that might have been?
Let's see. It was released that same year, but specifically around the same time that this movie...
1986, October.
Is that Soul Man?
It's Soul Man. Which was...
Wow, good guess.
36th on the box office chart for the year. Following Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, and Murphy's Romance, but before Wildcats, The Great Mouse Detective, and Heartburn. So, pretty good, Soul Man, making $27,820,000. That's what it made. Big, huge success for New World. In fact, they had another movie on the list. Black Moon Rising was number 100 for the year.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Eat and Run then continues to open around the country in 1987. And this is around the time they were also releasing Wanted, Dead or Alive in January and Death Before Dishonor in February. They would also release Beyond Therapy in March. But at that point, Eat and Run was already out of theaters. But 1986 was a good year for New World, and apparently a good year for a lot of independent studios. There was an article by the Associated Press that talked about how well independent studios did in 1986. This is what they said about New World. This year, New World will release an astounding 45 films, triple the number of most majors. Some will only be released regionally. If they catch on, they will get national release. If not, they head for the ancillary markets. With such films as House, Black Moon Rising, and Children of the Corn, the New World management has made a profit on 78 of its 80 films.
Hmm. Which one did they not make a profit on?
Which one of those two? Was it one of those, this one? I don't know. But that said, it does get released on New World Video in April 17th, 1987. And you can see it here in this handy April release of 1987 New World Video guide that I have. And you can see that it is in the first page.
Wow. That's the opening spread.
Wow.
The number one movie here is Eat and Run. That's the page one. You're like, ooh, what are they going to release? Eat and Run. Get ready for it. What else are they releasing? Also, right after Eat and Run, Place of Weeping.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did that actually come out? Did they actually release that movie?
Yeah.
It's about apartheid. Because I don't remember that one.
It's about apartheid. Oh, hey, boy. Place of Weeping, we'll see you at June Gloom.
Yeah. Huh? June Gloom.
That's a June Gloom right there, guys. Can't wait. Oh, that's going to be some fun. Huh? Us talking about apartheid? That just can't. There's nothing that can't be fun about that.
Just, what, no, so, you think I'm playing some half-assed motherfucking game?
We won't be then. Not a Place of Weeping. Just so as we go through the other ones, here's also what they put out. These all came out the same week, by the way, April 17th. Also came out, Three's Trouble.
Oh, Three's Trouble keeps popping up.
Three's Trouble.
Seriously.
A warm, witty battle of the sexes. It came out. And don't worry, guys, because I already have it.
So, ah, there it is.
Of course you do.
There it is.
Three's Trouble, everybody. That's, I believe, an Australian film. So $69.95. Also, Deadly Company, Sam Peckinpah, one of his early films they released on. So we get to talk about Sam Peckinpah. Again, $60. So
is that also June Gloom?
Could be. It could be. That, you know what? If we did, we would probably be pretty happy after Place of Weeping. That was just, oof, get through that one. It's, we'll see. Raw Courage, which we have already reviewed on this podcast. We already talked about Raw Courage. And that is what they released all in 1 week. Eat and Run, Place of Weeping.
What a week for them.
Three's Trouble and Raw Courage. That was...
That's a break-even week if I ever saw one.
That is new. That is New World in a little tiny...
little nutshell, tiny just cake. A tiny that's a little snack little, cookie right
little
there.
Taste, New World. Little taste. You deserve a cookie, New World Video. Look at you putting out all those four things. We've got a comedy, we've got a saddy, we've got some action, and we've got another comedy. And then we've got also another action. So, like, actually, they got five in there. So, a big, big week for New World Video. That is it. That is it for, our first movie of November.
No.
November. We put this off, but we got to it. And you know what? It wasn't as bad as we all thought. If you'd like to see it, you can check it out on our YouTube page. But we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please join us for more episodes as we explore the things we have previously put off. And we've got a doozy for you. And the next one we have, because it is long. It is long. That's all I'll say. It's a long one. But we will be returning to the world of television, much like we covered earlier this year in April sweeps. But please join us for that episode. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected. Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.